You know, with me experiencing being a transformation coach, I've discovered that people really want to be better. And a lot of times people are not shown the way, but they're thrown into the way. Of any sorts, we have to meet people right there, right where they are. That's the only way we'll be able to really push for effective change. We really want to be better, and we got to help each other.
Welcome to another episode of Rave, Bridging Humans, a place where the people get to hear you and the world get to see it, y'all. We ready. We ready. For y'all.
Is that the theme song?
Oh my God. What's up, Bridges? How y'all doing, man? What's up, y'all? We here, man, my guy. Yeah. We're here, man. Yeah, we here, Kadarius. What's up?
We here.
Yeah, y'all. This is Rave, Bridging Humans. And a segment of Rave, Bridging Humans that we have started. We're starting to do. This is my first one. Yeah. This is my first boy talk. Yes. So Kadarius, for you, I've explained to you what it is. I can explain to the Bridgers. So I know you, if you follow me on social media, you know, this first by the light, this intimate, the lighting.
Man, you know, I love this ambiance in the set.
You know, earthy. Yeah. You know, we got it. You know, I started, for mental health month in May. Doing boy talk. Mm-hmm. And so I think I did a post. I went and got my high school, one of my high school senior heads. I had my contacts on, bro. Yeah. I was doing my thing, you know what I'm saying?
I said, that's bold. Because I looked at my senior heads at my mama's house, and I was like, no.
No.
I couldn't do it. None of them is on Instagram. Right. Nowhere, to be fair.
I did that. I did one in my bed. I did a couple boy talks, and I was intentional, bro, as to going back to the little boy in me, because boy talk is essentially the little boys that live on the inside of us, healing those voices, right? Healing those voices and really pulling from a space of him that's in us. And so I wanted to start this on the podcast, doing boy talks. I think that it will help that I not only think, I know it will help that people will and can begin to humanize us as queer men, they're able to humanize who we are and able to humanize our experiences and not just see us from a religious space, not just see us from a construct of manhood that doesn't match with who they are. And so this is important for me. And so, y'all, Bridgers, this is a boy talk. This is a boy talk. And so you see the lighting is different. If you're listening, you can't see, but the lighting is different. You know, I always burn incense, but I got one just a little closer.
Yeah.
It's in the moment. We hit, you know, we need this energy, you know what I'm saying? Before we sat down, this individual who I have on this boy talk today, we have depth, and we discuss and talk about a lot. Like, our 20-30 minutes in the chair, bro, like, I'm trying to get it all out, he trying to get it all out, we trying to get it all in, because like, bro, we have a lot, because like, we are extremely like-minded. And I told him, because I was like, where am I gonna bring you on there? Where am I gonna bring? And I knew I wanted to bring him on. And I think I was at the gym, and in the moment, the Spirit gave me, give Duke Kadarius a boy talk. You know, he has a story, because he has depth to talk about a lot of things, but he has a story, and I honor your lived experience, brother. And I told him that, you know, I knew I wanted to be responsible with his lived experience. I needed to be responsible with his lived experience. And so we're in this moment, and we're gonna get into that story. But before we get into Kadarius' story, listen, if you have not shared, you have not liked or subscribed, if you watch this every week, or if this is your first time, welcome. Welcome to Ray Bridge and Humans. And please, by all means, don't just watch the episode. Please comment on the episode. And more importantly, please subscribe to the episode. And then, even more importantly, tell a friend. Tell a friend about the podcast. We're growing. We're building. I'm happy to be in the space. I mean, I'm coming up on a year anniversary, Kadarius. I started this July
65.
Right, right. I started this like July the 2nd, man. So wow. Coming up on, yeah. So, depending on where we push this out, you know, this episode out, but I'm so excited that I can do this, and I wouldn't rather be in this moment with anybody else but you in this moment to do this, to honor your story, to honor your lived experience. We got a boy talk. We got a boy talk coming, y'all. And this is my brother, my friend, Kadarius Cunningham. And becoming me in front of them. That's what we're kind of going to discuss.
Wait, Ray, I just pronounced my name wrong. What? Buckingham.
I said Cunningham. I'm sorry. I did say Cunningham. Then why did I say Cunningham? Right. What the?
Why are you nervous?
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm so sorry. Buckingham. Kadarius, I did not mean to do that. I don't know where I got Cunningham from. I know where I got the name Cunningham from. But I'm so sorry, bro. No, I apologize. I'm probably gonna cut this out.
Give me a blooper.
Real blooper, right? We got my friend, my brother, Kadarius Buckingham. I'm so sorry. Like, damn, bro. Shit, bro. Oh my God. So yeah, I'm sorry. Where did I get Cunningham from? I don't know. But nah, for real. But yeah. My brother, my friend Kadarius, and we're gonna have this boy talk. I like my guests to introduce themselves. So you can introduce the people to who you are, anything you want to share about you, bro.
First and foremost, I just want to say thank you for having me on. Thank you for trusting me with your first episode of Boy Talk.
I'm mad at myself for that. Hey, keep going. Let's go. Yeah. I feel like Steve Harvey in that moment let me stop. Come on. I'm listening.
Thank you for having me on trusting me with your first episode of Boy Talk. Like you said, those 30 and 40 minutes in that chair, we've gone from super religious conversations to where we actually got to know each other and how we identified and stuff like that, and how we grew deeper into that relationship and just the more depth of honesty that we shared. So a little bit about me. I'm Memphis born, grew up in Fraser, had the opportunity, my mom hustled to get me and my brother into White Station. So I'm thankful for that, that opportunity. Graduated from there in 2008, and I've spent all of my life living in Memphis, having opportunity to go other places and see other cultures and stuff like that. But Memphis is home. And for that, I will say that I get the right to love Memphis, and I get the right to judge Memphis to be better.
Absolutely.
Where do you want to start,
right? I know, right? That was good. That was a good start. Yeah, just the introduction of who you are, where you're from, and things, and all of the things, bro. I want to start, and this boy talk is lived experience. Like, it's all lived experience, and I believe that the ability to be able to humanize us as Black men in all of our stories, in every part of our story, because we, Kadarius, we live in a society that gives us a construct, right? And we say, this is the construct, and you need to, or you have to fit your life in this construct, regardless of whatever. You could be fitting other things, but you need to fit your life in this construct. And that does not work. It never worked. And now I feel like we're at a place and a point in society to where we truly see. Like, we are a generation that says, no, hell no. I'm not, I can't fit in that.
I can't.
And you cannot call me a man because I don't fit in.
Yeah.
And that's what we are. Yeah. That's what we are. And so with your lived experience, if you could, we just wanna have a conversation, man. Your lived experience as a not only a black man, not only a black man, but a queer man. And
yeah.
we can talk about your lived experience. And for the people who, because honestly, you know, I don't have all queer people watching this
right.
podcast. Right. I have everybody watching this podcast. I have a lot of respected people from every spectrum watching and listening to this podcast. So for me, this is extremely important because
right.
y'all, I would not have brought on anybody else in this moment to begin this, to set the bar for what Boy Talk is,
right.
than my brother Kadarius, bro. So,
man, so let me back up a little bit and
come on.
Talk about little boy Kadarius.
Let's go. What age?
Four.
Oh wow! Come on, let's go.
You
gonna go there? Oh wow! Okay.
If we're gonna be real,
we gonna be real. We gotta go. Come on, let's do it.
That's where my conscious narrative began.
Okay.
I think for me, much of life was hiding. And by that, I mean not necessarily who I was or sexuality. I just tried to diminish myself as much as possible because that was safe. When I was four, coincidentally, that was also the year that I was molested at daycare. But that had no bearing on the struggle, the internal struggle that I was already navigating. My dad would tell you that I had a crush on this girl named Danielle. He called her Danuela, and it was really cute at the moment. And I would just always laugh and blush and stuff like that. But actually, in my memory, Danielle was a tomboy. And she was a girl, but she didn't act like the other girls that were there.
Okay.
And so I feel like that was more of a friendship. Now, what my dad didn't know was that there was a kid that I had a huge crush on that was a boy. We'll call him T for the
okay,
podcast.
For the pod. We call him T for the pod, okay. Okay.
Where my T began.
The T. No pun intended.
All the pun intended. All the...
Okay.
And so, me and T played house. And T, he took on a... He was like the dad macho dude.
Okay.
And like, I naturally did chores at the house already, so it was like, I took on more what people would consider a feminine role.
Okay.
In the mom-dad relationship or whatever. And so, in playing house, as people do, house includes what parents do.
Okay.
And so some of that went on, and like it was weird at the time, but that for me was consensual. What happened a little bit later was not.
Okay.
And that was with an older individual, around the age of 12.
Wow.
He did some things that I was just like, I don't know what this is.
Wow.
I was told by my mom and dad that the no-no spots, the mouth, penis, and the butt, like nobody touches you there except your doctor and parents, right?
Come on.
But he did it, and in a way that was pleasant. And at four, hearing that all of this stuff is wrong, you're not supposed to do that. And then you feel it, and it feels good. You're confused.
Wow.
There's shame that entered the conversation in my head. Didn't know it was shame at the time, but that's what it was. And that shame drove me to silence. Like, my dad would even tell you, at four, I completely, something shifted in me.
Wow.
I don't know what that is, but I was less, my dad would say I was a fighter or obnoxious. I became more soft and docile.
Wow.
I think. So, yeah.
Wow. Bro, and bro, that, first of all, you said that so, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to the store and going to this event. Like, you said a whole lot in that moment, bro. And first, I wanna honor your lived experience, bro, because you just expressed a lot where identity is concerned. You expressed a lot where you expressed trauma, you expressed identity, you expressed so much at the age of 4.
Right.
Like, and I think just to start there, that's so important, bro, because he was 4. Right? He was 4, and it's so important that, because I think so much, and last night we had a event last night and it was good, bro. And
it was real good, actually.
Yeah, it was real good. And I think that so much of this and so much of our stories get pushed to the wayside because of a lack of education, right? Because that's not education. So I think the ideal is that, of course, in our family, something happened to us, or somebody do something, or just all of this starts and birth in you choosing that something, that this is what it is. But to hear your story, to understand that he was 4 and you knew before you had this traumatic experience, what?
It's interesting that you say that, because while you were talking, it made me remember my coming out story as well.
Okay.
And so, long story short, I was coming on 32 and wanted to be fully out before my Jesus year, 33.
Okay.
Prior to that, maybe 6 months to a year earlier, I remember sitting at my parents. We were celebrating something. It was a holiday or something. And we were sitting at the table, and like, I was just overwhelmed with emotions.
Okay.
I was also in counseling at the time. And so I was processing a lot of the trauma that I just spoke about, and like how that shows up in my everyday life, and how I interact with my parents and stuff like that. And so here I was, all in my head, trying to pretend like everything was okay, and I broke down at the table.
Wow.
And I knew what I was feeling in that moment was wanting to communicate that I'm fucking gay, and I want you to love me. I also knew in the same moment that that's not how I wanted to share my truth with my family. And so I'm having thousands of conversations in my head of like, how do I portray this truth? And my default was to say, I was touched.
Wow. Okay.
Because that's how I was informed that I believe that was a reason why, because my narrative growing up is that God doesn't like gays. Being a church boy, coincidentally, I also gave my life to Christ at the age of 4. I had been in that environment. That's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wanted to be cleansed, if I wanted to be made whole, if I wanted my world to make sense, if I wanted a future with God, it made sense to give my life to Christ at 4, right?
Wow.
And it made sense that for me to repress and move on, to heal, to function, somebody touched me. I'm not like this. I can overcome what Paul says is a thorn in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
The many nights that I fasted and prayed to not see my best friends in a romantic sense. The times I chose to go home because I didn't want to go over to the place because I knew that I would be hopeful that one of them would be interested in me.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, no, I can't go over there. I don't want to be a part of a frat because I know what y'all do. Y'all homoerotic as fuck.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't play that. If you coming at me, we about to go. Like,
yeah. Real talk. Like, what the fuck? We about to go.
Just pat my balls and call it a day. No.
Yeah.
What's up? Like, we doing this or not? And so
I got you.
Took me back to T. where we were playing house in those moments. And so going back to talking with my parents, I was touched. That is true. And that was the prerequisite for me to say, Mom, like, I'm bisexual. LOL. 3 years later, nah, Mom, I like dudes. And I know I told you that I was bisexual and I didn't know. If what the Lord felt about this, I do. Because, I mean, I went to seminary. I learned how to exegete, study the scriptures, do the history work that is associated with that. And through that study, man, at a point I was confused, but now I've reconciled and said, I don't need to be right. I could be wrong.
Wow.
But in that, I know that God loves me. In that, I know that all sin is forgiven, even if it is a sin, right?
My God. If you will, like, only if you will. Like,
only
yeah.
if you will.
Yeah.
Like, call it that, all
yeah.
sin is forgiven.
Yeah.
What I know is that my object is to love.
Yes.
My object is to feel love.
Yes.
My objective is to be seen. My objective is to be understood. And in me being seen and understood, if that doesn't fit in your narrative, if that doesn't fit in how you can unconditionally love me, there will be distance.
Wow, bro. You, man, bro, I love your story. I love your experience. And it's important that you're here.
Yeah.
And we hear you in this moment, and to understand your story and to hear your story. You were raised in a religious home. You were raised in a Christian background home. You have studied the Word of God. You have went to school to study. You have went to school, and you are equipped educationally to understand how all of this is broken down.
Right.
And again, I honor your experience, and I'm really fucked up right now. I am. But no, don't apologize for that, bro. And he has an incredible story, y'all. He does, and I know the gravity of this moment for you, you know, to be able to do this. And so I don't want to rush into, like, moving, like, beyond this moment.
Hey, man, you're going to have to push the gas, because I'm pushing.
You
push the gas, man.
Push the gas. And, yeah, right? I think the baby is like the dramatic Leo in me, bro.
Yeah. But, oh, if my Scorpio is a water sign, I'm like, hey, bro, I'm going with the flow.
Let's roll. Okay. When did you realize being seen was not the same as being understood?
Man, I have toiled with that question several times. There's a lot of different scenarios I can think of. I think one that sticks out the most is when I was playing piano. So let me back up. I remember growing up watching the likes of Whitney Houston.
Like, okay.
Her performance where she was cracked out, but she was
singing
absolutely high on the stage with Baby Girl Delivered, Michael Jackson, Prince, Lil Richie, watching their biopics over and over, just learning who they were. Not taking into account that three of the four that I named were closeted gay men.
Yes.
On some level,
right.
Let me back up. Closeted queer man, put it like that.
Let's go there.
That had nothing to do with it. Me also being
naturally inclined to music, loving to sing in the choir, gravitating eventually to piano. Those were just things that I was doing as creative outlets, things that I like to do, like certain boys like to play sports. My brother, like, he picks up a ball at the age of four, and like, the man is doing things that I practice to do. And so like, the natural giftings being obviously different, right? I remember practicing the piano maybe like in sixth grade, and my dad and my mom got into an argument over whether I should continue or not. For me, piano was like a self-expression. It was just like me singing, like me getting lost in the music, expressing all the emotions that I was suppressing, not realizing that's what was happening, but okay. Amazing Grace being one of my favorite songs. And to hear my dad say that piano shit's gonna make him gay, a punk, I think is the word that he used.
Wow.
I stopped. Like, I told my mom maybe a few weeks later that I didn't want to continue piano, but I wanted to pursue singing. I wanted a voice coach, because at the time, Usher was one of the biggest names in R&B. He was seen as masculine, macho, whatever. All the ladies loved him. And so, if I'm not going to be gay, I'm going to be a singer, and like, maybe then I can be accepted, right? And so I was accepting that misunderstood narrative without fighting to be seen as who I knew I was.
Wow.
I think that was the first time I can actually name that I chose to live for others versus living for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, bro. So being, I get it. And so in your being understood, like,
I'm gonna be taking a lot of sips after shit. So we might need to pause and refresh at some point.
No, That's cool. Being understood, did you find that to be performative for you, or was it more of being seen? Because I think that
being seen.
Okay.
I put on a performance.
So I understand that, and your being understood, was that another level of performance? Did you feel like I got to, or was it just like a natural piece for you?
It was hiding.
Yeah.
It was hiding.
That's what we want to get to.
Yeah. I didn't do choir because the choir teachers in both of middle school and high school were a little bit more flamboyant than the macho man that black men are supposed to be.
Yes.
And so I didn't want to be gay by association, right? I chose band.
Wow.
I did the trumpet. I played the baritone. And I remember my dad also saying, you don't really want to do this. You're just doing it to be a part of it. And in my head, I said, no, I'm doing this because I can't do what I want to do. I can't be a part of the choir because I know that some of them are more flamboyant, and I can't be seen that way with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So the choir leaders, the choir directors, like, they're that thing that I need to, like, damn. So I just, you know, I need to kind of shy away from that, man. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's a thing that we shy away from, bro.
And not to cut you off.
No, you're good.
I think that's also why I'm happy that we are doing something like this, because representation matters.
Yes,
we say that as a buzz phrase all the time, but to be able to see someone like you, to hear their voices, to see their mannerisms on screen matter. Because if I saw somebody like me, if I understood that, I have the man's name in my head
he was married to Denise from the Huxtables.
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's not fucking Lionel Richie.
No, it's not. No.
Can we Google? No. If I had images of like queer men, if I was exposed to variations of queer men, I think I would have embraced my queerness sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
You just said something that made me look back because it makes me. It kind of validates for me to understand that we've always been here.
Yeah.
We've always been here. And like, even before we came to terms, before we even became adults, like there was men before us who learned how to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And there were men before us. Right. And so hide in the way that he felt safe to hide, right? And so there were men before us that, you know, we saw like, I don't want that.
Right. Right.
And I
don't know what I want to be. I know that I desire to be with a man, but I don't see what that looks like on a platform. I don't see that around me.
Mm-hmm.
All I see is people hiding, right? Even when I was coming of age, 18, 19, 20, that was the era of Craigslist. And so, dang, mama, please don't watch this.
I know, right? No, both of our mamas, like, no, right?
But that was the era of Craigslist. And so, because I didn't have a safe space to talk about my desires,
mm-hmm.
All I knew was the internet. And so, personals, that was my jam. I remember checking my emails on college campus, leaving class to go hook up because I got somebody that looked good. Then I found out about the other apps, Grindr, Scruff, like we can name them, because I didn't have the community to reach out to. I knew that hookup culture, if we can call it that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That's not something that I wanted, but I also wanted to feel and be with a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the avenues to do that. That's all I knew, going back to what you know you do. Mm-hmm. That's all I knew. And I don't even know how we got to this topic.
I know, right? But we're here and I want to stay here because I want to go down this street for a minute. With everything you just expressed, me loving my family.
Yeah.
Right. Me honoring my family.
Right.
Me being a man, if I embrace manhood this way, honoring my legacy, and me respecting my family. And I know in the respecting there's an erasure of who I am. And so the erasure of myself, what did that look like for you to know that, okay, I love these people? Because this is how I came in the world. This is how I came on this earth, through my parents, through my family. These are my people. And what did that erasure look like for you?
Family? Like erasure of family? Is that what you're asking?
Well, the erasure of self.
Oh, okay.
To fit into this construct. Yeah, to fit into this construct of family.
Yeah, I think it was going back to like sixth grade. It was safer to play band, be in the band. It was safer to just do choir at church.
Uh-huh.
It was safer to not bring friends home. When I started to drive, it was safer to just go over to their houses and just hang out and be gone for days. Just coming in, just to shower, just to go to work, just to go to class, it was just safer to. I think erasure looks like me showing up less. Yeah. I for the better part of my 20s. Probably all of them. I missed a lot of holidays because I was struggling with the anxiety of this is who I am and this is how I portray and act around my people, my chosen family, my friends, and I have to go back and minimize myself. Yeah, I had to. I felt that like the little boy going back home. The man that I had learned to be apart from them couldn't show up in that space. Still can't show up in that space in some ways. And so the erasure is still there, I guess. I'm drawing those lines in now. Mm-hmm. I'm remembering. Yeah, if we're going to go with that metaphor, I'm remembering what that looks like and what that feels like and trying to conjure that person more frequently. Yeah.
And since we're here, like, I like, we
didn't, right? What are we doing? Right.
Because, like, I'm truly in a moment myself, right? I'm listening to you. And as I try to, like, steer this ship, like, I'm having to, like, let the fucking wheel go. And I'm having to, like, go with you because the erasure is so pertinent and it's so real. And the erasure, because I know that I need, like, that's not like I want to, but I need to fit in a space with my family.
And not just family, society.
Family and society. Because, and I wanted to ask you, what was that erasure different for you in church space? Or was it a different thing on the playground, like, at school? So, like, what did that erasure look like?
I'm going to go with the church first. It's the same but different.
Okay.
Different for me specifically. You kind of know my background, but for those that are listening, Bridget.
Let's go.
I church hop a lot. Starting when I was 18, I grew up and going to a missionary Baptist church in South Memphis. For those of you know me. And know where I went, but I don't think I'm
going to be coming out. Yeah.
And so when I turned 18, like, growing up, going to a black church, and then also going to White Station, there's an erasure that happened there.
Okay.
Code switching is acting. Let's just keep it above.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
And so you learn how to act, but also in acting, how do you find yourself? If I'm erasing myself at the same time as I'm trying to navigate both worlds, man, I'm lost. And I think when I turned 18, I chose White Station, Cadarius. If I can say that.
Okay. Yeah.
And that reminded me, when we were here last night, talking with the moms, and Trina talked about the ideal black man from the slave plantation and how that's baked in whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
And how I started to feel and resonate that I'm trying to fit that mold of whiteness. In black skin color, Lovecraft Country. Man, I wish
I gotta watch that.
Oh boy, wow.
I've heard, but I got to
boy, watch that. Yeah. You were behind.
Yes,
when they canceled that, I was big mad with black Twitter. I was big mad because there's no reason on God's green earth, other than the fact that they probably knew that Jonathan Majors had some bad history. They were about to
come out. Yeah.
Anyway, that was a rant. But in Lovecraft Country, there's a scene where the darker sister, somehow, I need to go back and watch it, but she has the ability to take on white skin.
Okay.
She was trying for decades, for years, to try to get a job in this shopping mall that was predominantly white, And like she talked the part, all that kind of stuff. But when they showed her getting in white skin, getting the job, getting the success, man, hearing that black story on screen, seeing that black story on screen, I was like, fuck. I remember having that conversation with my counselor.
Wow.
I feel like if I had white skin with the talent, with the degrees, with the network that I've had, I would be a lot further along in my journey.
Wow.
Healing from that, accepting my full ass black ass nigga ass self.
Uh-huh.
And trying to, again, draw in those lines of what that looks like for Kadarius. Blackness isn't a monolith.
No, it's not.
And so, again, exposing myself to different types of black men, different types of black queer men is necessary for my self-love.
Wow.
It's a journey. It's not always easy, but I think it's necessary for healing little boy Kadarius.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what parts of yourself?
I didn't even answer the question.
No, come on. I know it.
And so, like, church spaces, you asked.
Yeah. I was going to circle back. But
yeah, I know. I think each time I church hopped, I was trying to find myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find a space that I could bring my whole self. And so, the last church that I was a part of, it was a church plant here in Memphis. And it had a person of color leading it. I'm being very politically correct. Because I feel the need to protect. And so, in that space, there were conversations that I questioned if I could bring my full black self. It looked like I could. It felt safe at times, but there was something looming in my head that just made it. It was like almost like the get out situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like it feels okay. It looks okay, but not quite okay. And so that came to full head when we were having a conversation about Trump's second election. He's now been in the running for Trump's.
Yeah.
And so we were having backyard conversations on whether or not it was racist. That's the core of the conversation. It was racist for someone to, but if people of color could view someone as racist and why if they voted for Trump a second time, understanding that a vote for Trump was keeping along party lines. To date, 2025, we understand in full force why voting along party lines is detrimental to democracy, right?
Yeah.
Even when we know the person that we're putting in power is not good. It's one thing for them to lie to us and say that they're good, and then they carry that line. But for us to see and blatantly see that this person is no good, that they are racist, as a Christian, no. I don't care if you vote for abortion. If you are pro-life, you care about my black body, my black body.
Yes.
Living at breathing, heartbeat, now. That man does not care. And by that man, I mean 45 and 47, does not care about my black body. He does not care about my queer body. And so if I am having a conversation with you and talking, trying to defend my blackness and why it's not okay for you to vote for Trump, I definitely can have a conversation about how I like men with you. Because you see my skin color. I hide my queerness. I hid or try to my queerness.
And we try.
We do try. But they be knowing.
They be knowing. They be saying. They be saying.
My booty too big to
so you can't.
Comic relief, bro. We gotta laugh through this pain because this is shit.
Oh God, I love it. I love it, bro. No, I love it. Go ahead, finish it.
No, I was done. I think I had finished.
So okay.
If you can't see my black body, you can't see my black queer body.
Wow.
And so in that, I chose to leave. And I haven't been back into church space since.
Mm-hmm.
As I've been trying to find who I am as a queer man, as a gay man.
Yeah. So he thank you again for you sharing what you share and looking at it now, like,
I blame this age.
Right. Bruh, like because I'm seeing in this moment, like, and I use this word a lot now because it's a conundrum. And who you are, right? Who you are at your core. You now showing up as him, right? This shit, fuck all the bullshit. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. What version of you did they see? And what parts of you did they never get to see until you shifted your perspective on how you would show up?
Man, I don't think I've ever shown up fully as myself at my parents' place. I think...
Let me take that in, bro. Okay, come on. I'm good.
Yeah, I think I... they saw the part that they wanted to see. And that's what I felt grew comfortable in allowing them to see. I understand now, man, if you haven't seen, I'm a pop girly, if I can say that. That's real queer.
You can say that. You can say that.
And so I like documentaries, and one of the ones that's been really, really healing for me as a black man is Roth Daniels, Gerard Carmichael.
Oh, but
yeah. I remember seeing his self-titled comedy special, Roth Daniel, and like seeing that raw emotional stage as he's processing in real time on camera, that did something to me. That was also around this. I saw it around the same time I decided to like start the journey of only my gayness. To watch his documentary and see how real he is about how much it hurts him to hear his mom spout scripture in response to how I perceive him being honest and coming up and giving them an opportunity to know and love him. That resonated with me. I self-identified in it. And that's because my mom, I love my mom to death, that queen. It deserves all the accolades, praise, yes. Me. Like, that is, yes. That's my mom. At the same time, I see how different her love feels. I see her trying. Every time I'm around, I see it. I know she feels, I want to think that she's walking on eggshells for various reasons. I want to believe that she wants to have the conversation. I want to believe she just doesn't know how, because I don't. I've come out. I see now that the questions of who you're dating, who is she, there's no longer who you're dating questions. Yes, I'm dating. It's obvious I'm dating. My brother is dating. You used to ask, that used to be a staple question. But since coming out, we don't talk about that no more. We don't talk about Bruno. I'll play the part. I'll let you see what you want to see.
Bro, I'm so sorry. Like, yeah.
No, don't be sorry.
Let me take it back. I'm not sorry. I just want you to know, like, right now for me, bro, we in this ship, and we like going, like, I'm really like, because I hear you and I honor your experience, and at the same time, like, I feel the weight that you feel of our stories.
Yeah.
And I feel your boy top because I hear him. Mm. I feel him.
Mm. What is he saying? What is he feeling?
The little boy who wants to be heard, who wants to be, who just wants to be like seen and not fucked with and not like giving these set of rules that you gotta be in, but the little boy who just wants to be and wants to be understood because I did not choose what's happening. This is what's happening and I'm here and I'm human. Yeah, I know. I'm jealous that you still got some, but we gonna be in this moment because this is really good for me, and I think it's really healing for me, and I think it's really healing that you're able to share, because the way you show up with your family, you said something so powerful to me. Like, I don't know really how to have a conversation, and I feel like she wants to have a conversation, but she don't know.
Mm-hmm. And so I say that because when I was growing up, when I didn't know how to say things to my parents, I was always better with written word than I was with spoken word. So sometimes it gets stuck from here to here, it don't come out right. And so I would write letters. And so each birthday or Christmas, special holidays where gifts are given, mom writes a letter to me and my brother. And it's basically a mini sermon on, she wants us to get right with the Lord. And I want so desperately to be like, Mom, I feel like I'm doing the best I can with where I'm at. I do understand that God, you ain't gotta convince me that there's a God. Like, I know that.
Yeah.
And I hear and I've read and I've cried through the person of Jesus. Like, I try to emulate, and people that work, that I work with, see that I try to emulate that person. Why can't you? And it's only because I choose to be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And not who you desire me to be.
Yeah.
And I understand that it took me 33 years to name that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also extend grace to all of my family, brother, mom, dad, even the cousins and aunties and stuff that be on Facebook asking the questions. Like, yes, A, I am, and B, like, I understood it took me a while to get there. And maybe this is the blind faith person that I am. I hope that eventually they'll get there before it's too late. Like,
wow.
My parents always talk about, they ask me to come over more, or ask why I don't come over more. And to me, that's one of the hardest questions to answer. Because, me and my brother talk about this a little bit. Shout out to him. Like, love that man to death. Like, he's been a rock through a lot of things. And so, like, yeah. But we go over to our parents' house elevated.
Okay.
Man, bro. Just to navigate sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we laugh about the stuff that's said and stuff like that, and we never talk about it, but I go home and mull over it because of my anxious attachment style that's been part of my trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I go home and have to journal and process and get on my yoga mat and release. That's work that I have to do before and after just to be around, when I wish I could just come around and just be. But no, because I want to paint my nails. My nails not painted right now. Don't look at them. But I want to paint my nails. But like, if it's a holiday coming up, I got to figure out
or the thought is, I gotta figure out how to get these off before I show up. Right? Damn. Right now, all I got is my going outside clothes. That's clean. Because at the end of the day, I'm still a jock. And I but like,
yeah.
All I got clean right now is my going outside clothes. And I got to hurry up and do this laundry before I go over there. Poor planning on my part. I get that. But I also shouldn't have to. If I got clean clothes, I should be able to just pop up
and go.
Right? Why don't you come over after work, man? Because if you follow me on Instagram, you just seen like some clothes that like I wear to work, but you will have questions about it. I ain't got time for the questions.
Wow. Man, well, that's a lot. That's a lot. And because you want to show up, right? Right. You want to show up, number one, and you want to show up in the way that you can be loved, and you want to show up in the way that they can love you.
Right. And so like I don't want to force it on them.
Absolutely.
So to speak.
Absolutely.
But I also don't want to hide. And so what I'm not going to do, to use the term of the podcast, is erase myself
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I create space for me to exist, and I create space for me to exist with y'all.
Wow. And becoming you in front of them, it's a task.
It was a slow process.
A slow process, right?
Soft lunch.
Right, yeah. Soft, if you will. Soft lunch, if you will. And, bro, just station identification, bro. Like, this is good because, like, I'm truly, I want to be in the moment. I want to feel the moment. And what I'm feeling in the moment is I see, like, the navigation of you staying true to who you are, as well as just not only you stand true to who you are, you trying to present.
Well, I think I'm still fighting for who I am.
Okay.
I'm fighting to find that person.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I don't need to be attacked for who I am
mm-hmm.
and finding who I am.
Right.
The questions feel like microaggressions, and I think we talked about
that a little bit. Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what I said, but
no, we talked about from a space of with your parents, like the microaggression, like they're not intended for it to come off mm-mm. away, but
it still comes.
It still comes that way. Right. Right.
And two, I think this is why counseling is necessary for the Black community, because I now have language
mm-hmm.
for what I feel. And I would love to be able to have those conversations with my parents of what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, and how my perspective could be different from their perspective. And then we can see each other. I hear them say, Kadarius, when I did that, I was afraid. Going back to last night, hearing the mothers talk about how they were raised in different culture or a different time period. Damn, they're not that old. But like different decades.
Yes.
Different eras. And Trina was talking about how her mom was born in the 1940s,
mm-hmm.
where the objective was to get home.
Yes.
In Mississippi.
Yes.
Like to be Black, to be successful was to get home, versus when she was born in the 1970s.
Yes.
Life was life.
Yes.
In the 80s, things seemed to be decent for Africa. We weren't always constantly looking over our shoulder.
Right. Right.
Except if you were the popo, then it was a different story.
Yeah.
But I understand that my parents grew up differently than I did. And therefore, they saw the 80s, mm-hmm. where AIDS was like rampant. People were dropping, like the coronavirus. Like,
yeah,
I get that lived experience, and I get that that could be a reason why they respond the way that they do. And in the response, I see rejection, but it's fear. I want to have that conversation, mm-hmm. but we can't, because I can only lead them to counseling water, but I can't make them.
You know, taking it. And you just brought something up, Kadarius, because I just recently kind of considered that, like my parents, my mom and my pops, you know, living through the 80s, seeing the AIDS epidemic, you know. And when I first told my mom, right. I was queer, the first, you know, she was like, mm-hmm. I just don't want you to die. Uh-huh. And I just don't want to. So I know that that period injected trauma that I don't think they consider when they look at us, you know what I'm saying? And so they're, through their lens, that's what they saw, and you're that thing that took people out. And not only that, like the whole, behind that, the whole Christian national agenda to say, this is, you're this way, you're gonna die because you're sin, this is what it is. And so from that, the white Christian nationalist, like, that flows down to the black church. And yeah, like they're dying because they're gay. They're dying because they're doing this. And so God is punishing them. And so all of that went on in the 80s. And God forbid, the baby that I have, I raise him up in the identity and the church and the life that I think he should. And he turns out as this. And so I recently just had that, like, aha moment, like, damn, like, I want to consider that with them. And so with that, like, and I know this, I probably should have asked this at the beginning of the interview, but I'm gonna ask it now, and I know we don't have much time, but I wanna ask it now. How do you reconcile, it's a big question, Kadarius, but how do you reconcile your faith with who you are? Like, how do you reconcile that, bro? At this stage.
He closes the laptop.
Yeah, because I know, like, I'm not getting no other questions in after this, so.
You said a mouthful first of, like, white nationalism, or just Western Christianity.
Yes, Western Christianity.
And how it has fueled this fire brimstone narrative of God's love, has weaponized it for against people that they did not see as people, starting with black slaves, right? Uh-huh. I would even say Native Americans, right? Uh-huh. When Christopher Columbus stumbled onto the Caribbean, he called them savages, and there's diaries of white Christians, some who white Christians herald as fathers of the faith, writing damning journal entries of Native Americans, mm-hmm. and African slaves, detailing our body parts and why we are made for manual labor, and yes. they are superior. They being white people, white men are superior and have a higher intellect for business and the exploitation of the goods of the land. Let's just keep it a buck.
Yeah.
These are the same white Christians that have policed bodies, use scripture to police bodies and how they should look, and how they should present, and how they should act. These are the same white Christians that also
dictate what professionalism has looked like in these United States of America. Why black women cannot wear afros or cornrows. Mm-hmm. Why we fight to be able to wear our natural hair. Why even queer men question what they wear when they go to work. Why even studs question what they wear when they go to work. How have I reconciled my faith? I'm reconciling my faith. I have deconstructed scripture to a point where I see it, I acknowledge the truths that exist within the text. And the truth that exists in the text for me is love. The truth that exists in the text for me is God's benevolent provision for us. When I see the text being used for hate, exclusion, I just can't be in those environments. And so, though I long for community still, it would be hard pressed to find me in a pew. My faith is not contingent on religion. My faith is not boxed into the confines of what thus says man. Because what man has done has distorted what I think. Man, we're supposed to be naked and unafraid walking around here, Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. and Steve, somewhere around there.
Somewhere around that, right? you around now.
Like, that's what we were supposed to do. And we put on clothes because we now know. I'm done hiding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, bro. You just said so much, bro. And I'm just so thankful for you in this moment because it's a reconciliation for real. It is coming into who you are and knowing who that being is, and learning and solidifying your journey in this thing called Earth. And understanding the constructs you've been given, and also understanding like your plight, like who you are. Like, that's a huge task that most wouldn't take. So I celebrate you and I honor you in this moment. And as we close this Boy Talk Kadarius, if you could go to the 15-year-old Kadarius and tell him something, speak to him. And journeying to that moment in your life, you could speak to him. If you could tell him anything that would be beneficial to who you are now, what would you tell that boy inside of you, bro?
Love yourself. I think I did things fighting for the love of others and the approval of others. I would definitely be in the choir.
Man, listen, bro. I don't want to make light of this moment, but I truly I felt the this spiritual depth. We went, and I felt this. I feel in this moment the spiritual depth of the moment, and I thank you. Words cannot express how much I thank you, y'all. And I value this man. And I thank him. And I want to do more with you. I want to do more with you. And as I told you yesterday, and I told you this maybe last year, maybe 3 months ago, I truly want us to cultivate our ship, bro, and cultivate what that looks like, because, like, it's rough out here. It's hard. And when you find people who you find souls that have come here. Yeah, I'm going to go there. When you find souls that come here to this thing called Earth, who aligns with your journey, like, that's not to be taken lightly. It's not to be taken, like, no, like we need community. And we need, it's important for me to find safety with souls like, to find safety with souls like me, and to understand that we were put here in this time, in this, we were sent here in the 80s, right? And we were sent here, and we were, you know, and we're here now, and it's 2025, and I'm so big on kindred brotherhood, kindred, like, soul connections, like, and this is important to me, and this morning. Yeah. The part of God's body. Stand with me. Stand with me. Agree with me.
Come on, agree.
We're all part of God's body. It is His will that every need be supplied. You are important to me. I need you to survive.
Cause that's what we
try
to do.
That's what we try to do, right? We
try
to survive, right?
We try to thrive.
We try to thrive.
Gotta survive.
Fuck, yeah. Bro, thank you so much, bro. This is my first boy talk. Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Thank you, bro, for gracing your story with the stage. And I truly, to my heart of hearts, I believe and I know and I speak that it will resonate with somebody. If you have a comment,
I hope so.
Yes, it's going to. If you have a comment, something you want to say, something you want to share, please, by all means, share it, say it, speak it. I'm here. Listen, I got an armory behind me. I will fight. So come on, you want to fight? Let's fight. We can go. If you want to just share and support, just share and support as well. But we're here. Any last words, bro? Before we close out?
No. I think I said enough, man.
But it's been good. This is good. How you feel?
Oh, man. Heavy but light.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I'm anxious to see where.
I know, the right?
Response for this.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I know, right?
But I really do hope that someone hears, and it resonates with someone. And my story could be your story.
Yes.
We have similar backgrounds. What I'm trying to say is that we have more alike
than we don't. Right. So, yeah. Right. Thank y'all. Thank y'all for watching your bridges. Subscribe, please subscribe. And this has been another episode of Ray Bridging Hammer. It's a place where the people get to hear you and the world get to see it. This has been Boy Talk. Thank you, Kadarius.
Yep.
Thank you, brother. Love you, man. See y'all next week. Peace.